KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in El Sabrante.
I live in Emeryville.
I live in Antioch, California.
Potter's Creek.
Pleasant Hill.
I live in Albany.
Coming up, we'll check in on a women-run homeless village in Oakland.
This is an encampment that centers the needs of women and the leadership of women, which you don't see in any of the encampments.
Then we'll visit the leftover town of El Sabrante.
You know, we like it the way it is, and that's been kind of the attitude for residents of El Sabrante for years and years, is we like it the way it is.
And we'll hear how a Bay Area band forged its own unique identity.
Bang Data just stuck, and it's exactly what the music is. It's that force of nature with the sound backed with information.
A force of nature with sound backed with information. It's Cross Currents, and it's next. Last fall, organizers and volunteers set up a women-run homeless community in East Oakland's Brookfield neighborhood. They called it the Housing and Dignity Village. About 13 people moved onto a vacant lot that was public land. The city of Oakland threatened to evict them. Advocates went to court. And so what happened then? KALW's Janae Darden visited this village, and she's here to give us an update. Hey, Janae.
Hi, Ben.
I understand this was not a happy ending for the people of the homeless village.
This didn't go the way the village was hoping. Organizers and volunteers, they established this community late October, but the city said they couldn't stay there because it was illegal and not habitable, and residents in the neighborhood complained. So when we spoke about this back in November, the Housing and Dignity Village filed a temporary restraining order against the city, and they claimed their 8th and 14th Amendment rights were violated.
Okay, so these amendments to the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, that one's about protecting life, liberty, and property. Mm-hmm. So I could see that. The 8th Amendment, though, that talks about not allowing cruel and unusual punishment. So how did that claim apply here?
Well, federal courts recently ruled in the case Martin versus Boise that banning people from camping outside and criminalizing homeless people who don't have access to shelter actually violates the 8th Amendment. Hmm. And so after the temporary restraining order, they went back to court.
But Oakland and Alameda County do have shelters.
Right. True. They do. But many of them are full, and some people say they're unsafe or they don't take animals. And so when both sides went back to court, the city's attorneys argued that there is shelter for the people in the village. They're just not taking advantage of it. Mm. And so the judge ruled that the 8th Amendment does not apply in this case because there is access to shelter.
Sure.
And so the villagers, they had to leave.
So they had to leave. How did that go?
I spoke with Nita B., who was one of the main organizers, and the way she described it, Ben, it was pretty traumatizing. This all happened in early December, a few weeks before Christmas. She says the day before they were forced to leave, they had a meeting with City Councilman Larry Reed's office, people from Human Services Department, and city administrators about having a future meeting on a way for them to stay. Mm-hmm. And she says that everyone seemed on board with that. But the city officials, they've issued a statement. They said that is not correct. They said they did not agree to negotiate or delay the move-out date for the village residents.
So they were going to go right ahead with it.
Right. And so the police and public works department, they came the next day around the time people were at work. Mm. And they dismantled the village. Nita B. told me they threw their stuff away and the villagers were scrambling to get their belongings. There's video all online with people protesting, trying to block the police from coming in. You know, public works breaking down everything. It was pretty chaotic from what I saw.
That sounds really intense.
Very intense, Ben. And the village was really a unique place. I visited there and it's run by women. It was very organized. They had an outdoor kitchen, like outdoor oven. It was clean. Hmm. They had compost bathrooms. They provided internet access to people in the community.
Compost bathrooms.
Yeah. So Nita B. and others tell me they wanted a women-run encampment because sexual assault of homeless women is very high.
Yeah.
They're very highly vulnerable on the streets, and access to resources when they've been violated can be difficult.
So where are the 13 people who stayed there? Did the city help them out?
The city administrator issued a statement saying they would help them. They offered shelter beds for the 13 people, mm-hmm. including families, and they said they would store their property for 90 days and notify them of where to pick up their belongings. But Nita B. told me they're still on the streets, sleeping in cars, under bridges, in abandoned buildings.
Instead of the shelter, why?
She said the shelters they were referred to were full. But those shelters offered to take them and bump others off the list. Huh. And that would entail displacing someone already there. Yeah. And the women didn't want to affect someone else having a roof over their head. And she also says they've had trouble getting their stuff back and allies are helping by contacting the city. In a statement where the city addressed the court ruling, they expanded on how they're working on the homeless crisis. They report using $8.6 million in emergency funding to create more tough shed camps.
Right. Those are those portable sheds. That's one of the city's solutions that started up last year to provide temporary shelters at different sites around the city.
Right. And they're also planning to open managed RV sites and increase the number of shelter beds in the city.
Okay.
Now, a report called Housing Oakland's Unhoused estimates there are at least 9,000 people homeless in Oakland. So the city has a lot of work to
9, do. 9,000. Yeah, that's going into the last mayor election. I think that homelessness is one of the most important issues for Mayor Schaaf that she faced and needs to get a handle on.
Definitely.
So, Janae, what is next for the women from the village?
Nita B says the fight is not over and they have filed a lawsuit against the city.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Janae.
Thank you.
Janae Darden reports on East Oakland for KALW. You can reach her at janae@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. It's no secret, Oakland has changed a lot in the last decade. But what's happening in other parts of the Bay Area? San Francisco? Yes. San Jose? Oh yeah, it's changed. Well, today we're going to go off those beaten paths to visit a town in the East Bay that seems to attract less attention than its neighbors. But maybe not for long. It's the town of El Sobrante. Celine Ross has more.
We're driving over the Berkeley Hills and turning left at San Pablo Dam Road. Passing the reservoir and all these hills, and then, yep, there it is. The faded green sign that says, "Welcome to El Sobrante." I've done this exact trip hundreds of times, because this is my hometown. Never heard of El Sobrante? You aren't alone. Most of my friends in the Bay Area haven't heard of it, and even fewer have been there. And I get it. Yes, it's 20 minutes from Berkeley, but when I was growing up here in the late 90s, it felt like the middle of nowhere. Two decades later, many parts of the Bay Area are almost unrecognizable, but El Sobrante, to me, it feels largely the same. Could that even be possible? Could this recent wave of change have skipped my hometown? I'm going back to look a little deeper, to revisit the places I remember growing up and see what's still the same and what isn't. We begin at Thrift Town, a place where I spent a lot of time back in the day. If people know where El Sobrante is, it's usually because of Thrift Town. I like to think of it as the jewel in the rusty crown of our town. In the window, there's even a big sign that says, "Best Thrift Store in El Sobrante."
It's the only thrift store.
Thrift Town is the closest El Sobrante has to a town square. Sally Collins has been the manager of this cavernous treasure chest for 30 years. She also came to this location long before that.
I came here roller skating.
That's right. This used to be a roller rink. These days, there's not a lot of places to just hang out in El Sobrante. There's Maria's Bakery, where the tres leches cakes are great, and the free coffee comes in styrofoam cups. And the Little Caesars is pretty popular with the teen set. So if you're looking to kill time, you're probably going to end up here at Thrift Town. You can find everything from antique cabinets and old board games to colorful saris and vintage skirts.
One guy bought a painting in here for $99, turned around, sold it on eBay for $18,000.
And the customers? They're just as diverse as the inventory.
All kinds. Young, old, rich, poor. A lot of people come in here looking for something specific or just to see what's new. Years ago when my daughter worked here, she used to follow Green Day around in here. They would shop for their t-shirts.
Sally's lived in El Sobrani a long time, but she's still a fan of its small town feel.
I love El Sobrani. The hills, it's not a city. We're kind of hidden too.
El Sobrani has flown under the radar since its beginning. In fact, it got its name from when land grants were divided among the rancheros. Rancho Sobrante was the bit that remained. Sobrante literally means the leftovers.
We like the name. I think El Sobranians are proud of it.
That's Donald Baston, the president of the El Sobrani Historical Society.
You know, we like it the way it is. And that's been kind of the attitude for residents of El Sobrani for years and years, is we like it the way it is.
Donald leads me on a tour of downtown, which, I should say, is just two streets. He shows me historic sites, like where the first post office was, and the old rodeo grounds.
We put in 12 historic markers in the downtown area.
There was a mid-century building boom, but not much has been built since. There are a couple little strip malls, some of them with their original signs, and a whole block of mechanic shops. And there have been some modifications. There's a Baptist church in what used to be a movie theater. And a couple years ago, the Goodwill across the street turned into a dollar store, which I'm not really sure counts as gentrification. Above our downtown, there's one thing that's been here for 40 years, but looks like it could have been here for 400. It's a massive, ornate structure on the hill that seems out of place in this unassuming town. Welcome to the Gurdwara Sahib. It's a Sikh temple, and its golden domes can be seen from most places in town. It's our landmark, the Golden Temple keeping guard over El Sobrani. This Gurdwara was one of the first in the region. It opened in the mid-60s. It's still sometimes called the Sikh Center of the Bay Area, because most of the other Gurdwaras around the Bay were started by members of this one.
I'm Kamaljeet, and I regularly visit the El Sobrante Sikh Center.
Kanwaljeet has been visiting this temple for almost 10 years. She helps out with the temple's community service programs. The doors are open every day for prayers before work, for programs like after-school tutoring or free medical care, and for special events. When we were there, there was a wedding going on.
Is that the bride? Which one is she?
The bride is in the pink.
The pink in sitting the front, in the middle?
Yeah, middle. And the groom is the one with the light pink turban sitting next to her.
Even though the couple lives 40 minutes away, they wanted their wedding to be at the Gurdwara Sahib. The temple isn't just for Sikhs. They welcome everyone. The Gurdwara serves a free hot vegetarian meal to anyone who comes to visit. In fact, it's my dad's favorite place to take out-of-town guests. A nice meal and a great view of El Sobrani.
This is where the cooking happens, behind there. You would like to have some?
So why El Sobrani? They chose this spot because it reminded them of temples in India.
The main Gurdwaras in India, they are in hilly places. And there was one main Gurdwara in Anandpur Sahib. It's on the top of a hill. So the founders actually compare this to that Gurdwara.
But it's more than the hills.
The Sikhs, when they came more than 100 years ago to United States, California is where they came, because they came from farming community. And this is the land which was right for farming.
And that's still true. Even today, it's not uncommon to see folks on horseback riding near my parents' house. But the current farms of El Sobrani are a little different from the ones back in the day.
So this is Cloverfield Organic Farm in El Sobrante on La Paloma Avenue. And I'm Susan Abernathy. I'm the owner. And I have a helper, Michael, and we do this all the time, year-round.
Cloverfield Organic Farm is next to an herbalist and permaculture school. Susan Abernathy's neighbors have goats and cows. Her helper, Michael Lancaster, introduces me to a few.
Watch out to see if the cows are coming close, or they'll eat my head. Well, you know, out here, portable shade does help. You know,
yeah.
I asked Abernathy why she chose El Sobrani.
Part of it is because it has an agricultural heritage. Plus, surprisingly enough, it's still somewhat affordable.
It's a very pastoral scene for a place that's 30 minutes from downtown Oakland. But I'm curious if she feels like it's changing.
It seems to be becoming more of a magnet for people that are into organics and natural farming, a lot of families.
I can think of another reason why families are moving here. It's the high school. Or should I say, the new and improved high school. De Anza High School is down the street from the house I grew up in, but I didn't go to school there. Because a decade ago, it was a small, rather rundown building, and the graduation rate was super low. But in the past 10 years, it was totally rebuilt and almost doubled in size. I think this is probably the biggest change in El Sobrani. When I visit, the leadership class is getting ready for the homecoming dance. The gym is full of black and gold balloons.
Hey, my name is Mariana Barsotti, and I'm the ASB treasurer, class of 2020, junior.
If you had asked me about El Sobrani when I was a teenager, I would have said the only good thing about it was Thrift Town. But these students seem pretty okay living here.
It's kind of close-knit. Like, we have our own little community. Like, our neighbor is helping us bring a van to bring the tables for our homecoming dance today. But then you go out of El Sobrani and you kind of see, like, it's starting to change a little bit. Like, maybe some more gentrification.
For me, there's something reassuring about El Sobrani staying largely the same. But it seems this leftover town is poised to become the next big thing. And while homes are still less expensive than many Bay Area hotspots, the value of homes in El Sobrani increased 12% last year. That's triple the rise in Oakland. El Sobrani never had a thriving art scene like Oakland, or historical relevance like Berkeley. And it sure never had the big city allure of San Francisco. But what it did have, what it does have, is harder to explain. Running into my old dance teacher at Thrift Town, driving past the ponies on Santa Rita Road, and seeing the pristine hills that surround it all. Those are the things I'm afraid of losing. In El Sobrani, I'm Celine Ross for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. When Deuce Eclipse and Juan Manuel Caipo joined forces in 2008, they wanted to make music that could do two things: provide information and make beats to bang. Their band, Bang Data, does just that. Deuce Eclipse comes from the world of hip-hop as an MC and a b-boy, while Juan mostly played rock before joining the band. Together, both Juan and Deuce combine influences from other genres too, from cumbia to hip-hop to metal. Bang Data came into KALW's studio to talk about their music and to play some acoustic versions of their favorite tracks in this edition of Bay Area Beats from our archives.
We met in 2008, yep, in Oakland, California, the historic West Oakland.
That's when the bromance started.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Let the bromance begin. Me despierto con música en mi mente y todos saben que yo soy el presidente. El Nica Mexica, el pinolero residente americano
nacido con corazón nicaragüense. My name is Juan Manuel Caipo. They call me Caipo, and I play drums and I'm a producer in Bang Data. Well, I was born in, I'm from Peruvian family. I was born in Los Angeles, and anyways, went to Peru, came back, started playing music. All my folks, family are musicians.
I am Deuce Eclipse, a.k.a. Coqui Calavera, the singer, MC. I am a Bay Area native, one of the many rare species that you see walking around the streets nowadays. I was first generation born here in the United States from Nicaraguan parents from Central America. And my father was a singer as well, you know, and a guitar player, organ player. And so I grew up with a lot of the old school music. We hear when you come to the show. So here we go, here we go. Si, prendete fuego ya, todo mundo pa bailar. No tiempo pa descansar, yo canto el paso limar.
This song is called Mucho Poco, and it's the self-titled track from our album Mucho Poco. It's celebrating love, but at the same time, it's a bittersweet song because it expresses the end of a relationship, you know. Mucho poco, pero poco mucho, mi amor es loco, pero no está roto. Mucho poco, pero poco.
It's kind of a weird thing to say, but what is the term oxymoron when you say two words that are almost the opposite in the world? I'm not sure the definition, but mucho is like a lot and poco is like a little. So the song is like, you know, a lot and a little all at the same time, kind of like in the sense of the little things count, you know, as well. Like a lot of the little things is what in the song, you know, they were lacking, or what was lacking in the love relationship and why it kind of fell apart.
It's more of a transition about a new stage in life, really. Pero dime dónde estás. Pero dime dónde estás.
All right, listo?
Let's do it.
This song is They Don't Know, and it's basically just about the story of my parents coming here and just the experience of being a first generation born, you know, Latino in the Bay Area, and just how it feels when you can't speak English, for instance. Yo, my dad was in the blur, I know it's so tough being him. And my mammy so depressed, and how did all of this begin? And there is love in this house, but this country gave us doubts. And it's like if you talk back, they like, hush your mouth. Pero no me conoces, yo soy un toro conmigo. You walk around with this idea that they don't know what I'm saying, or they don't know how I feel, you know, they'll never know because they don't understand my culture and I'm not speaking your language. But, you know, it morphs into everybody, you know. You walk down the street and you see somebody, you'll never know what they're really thinking or feeling. You know, it's that feeling of being separate in the world.
We never consider ourselves to be a political band, but I think especially where we're at, like in this time and age, you can't help it because you start expressing yourself, whether it's in a show or through songs. It might not be direct or very obvious what the lyric is about, but definitely there is a sense of a social political message. You know, whether you're an immigrant or whether you're talking about, you know, sorrow and love, about, you know, it could be a family, it could be, you know, it could be friendship. It can be the stress and the pressure of times of, you know, trying to come up and stay afloat, you know, trying to find, you know, trying to make a living. I think the responsibility, I think us as humans or artists, we definitely have a microphone on stage, you know, we have recording capabilities, but I wouldn't tie ourselves into like, it's, we have to do this. I think it should really come from the heart. And I think as people, you know, we're just sharing our experiences as Latinos and, you know, from second generation Latinos from here in the United States. And we're watching the change of times like right in front of us. So whatever happens today or tomorrow, I'm sure we'll be either singing about it or talking about it.
I live by a motto, which is, you know, the creator gave us a piece of ourselves that's for the world. And you always have to give that part of yourself to the world. That's what it's there for. You know, we're not here to like barrel it down your face or anything like that, but it's in the music, and it's always going to be in the music as long as I'm behind a microphone, because that's just how I was raised. You know, I'm close to the community, I care about my people, I care about the world. So that's always going to be, I feel, a part of Bang Data's sound. No me conoces, no me conoces. No me
conoces, no me conoces. That was Deuce Eclipse and Kaipo of the Oakland band Bang Data. The piece was produced by Jen Chiem. Catch Bang Data live January 19th at the Fillmore in San Francisco, where they open for Ozo Motley.
Music we're listening to right now is Small Crush from Oakland. They'll be playing at 924 Gilman in Berkeley this Friday night. You might find members of the Cross Currents team at the show, including Janae Darden, Sarah Nora Coast, Priya Mahadevan, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Truk Nguyen, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Kristen McCandless, with help from Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. You can hear the best of Cross Currents anytime by subscribing to the Cross Currents podcast. Do it at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. Thanks for listening. I'm Ben Trefney.